This is a Pinball News production.
All right, thank you for coming and listening. As Tim said, I've been doing art most of my life. Nothing really professional. I never got to the level of doing one-man shows or anything like that, but I have a lot of friends who have done that, and my grandmother was an artist, so I was always around it when I was a kid, watched her draw and paint, and she had a dark room, taught me how to do photography when I was 8 years old. And a project I started, because of her, I started silk screening in high school. She gave me all this silk screening equipment, and just kind of a big box of stuff, and I kind of left it up to me to figure it out. And I went to the library, checked out as many books as I could, and I started seeing names of products that were in this box and kind of hacked my way through printing. And many years later, a friend of mine, back up just a little bit, I was always into pinball, and early in the, when I started collecting in the 80s, I realized that the back glasses were a lot of times deteriorated, and this was before anybody was really doing glass. And so, as most of you would probably imagine, I passed on many gems out there because of no glass or bad play fields and all this other stuff. And I found out that there was a guy out of Arizona who had reproduced a shortstop glass, and I got in contact with him, and he had said that, well, my artist won't do it anymore, and so I asked him to send me the film. And to make a long story short, that's the first glass I ever printed, and started doing it for Herb Silver's Fabulous Fantasies at one point. But so that will be the next photo. But this right here was my introduction to a lot of artists. This is a guy named K.R.K. Ryden. He's an older guy. He's 57. I just met with him a few weeks ago. Cranked out this Circus Punk for a Devo convention. These are Devo characters, believe it or not. He's really close to the band. He's been doing artwork for them since the 80s. And we're going to try to get him involved in making another game here. So this was a project called the Circus Punks. This is how I met Dirty Donnie and many of the other artists that I'm working with. So this goes to the wall of glass in my office. I was doing glass back in the early 90s. And this is a brief sneak peek of the Beatniks game.
Yeah, just use the arrow keys.
Okay, great. Okay, so this is a sneak peek of the Beatniks game. Now, many of you have seen the Metallica game that was here at the show last year that Tanya and I also worked on. This is the same team of people. Dan Kramer also involved, Rolf Britton, who does the awesome clear coat metal flake job. After James Hetfield saw the Metallica game, it was, I believe, 3 days later. He was so excited, he calls and goes, I want to do another one. Can we do something on my car club? And Donnie was like, yeah, we'll do it. So at the show, we were kind of poking around ideas what game we were going to use. And I already had an Elvira, and I had loaned it to Donnie. It's one of his favorite games. And so he just thought, well, let's just use this. I'm familiar with it. It's in my house right now, and there's a lot of room for really cool artwork. So being that we already had one, we used my game. And I was lucky enough to land a real beater playfield. And so, believe it or not, that's a beater playfield. You can't tell by these photos, but the paint's lifting up all over the place because somebody did a bad job on pulling up Mylar. So you just put the good old paint stripper on there and start sanding away. Get it nice and level. And then you got to seal it. That's this is just off-the-shelf sealer product you can get at the Home Depot and stuff made by Minwax. So that seals all the grain, gives you a really, really good coat for a paint. Of course, you scuff it a little bit. And Donnie had come up with this line art here for the back glass. What you see is actually a collaboration of many drawings. The skull character to the lower lower left. This is reversed. You see it as this is the key line for printing. That is the car club logo, the skull guy. And then throughout the glass, you'll see different characters who are involved in the club, including James, another artist named the Piz, a guy named Von Franco, Jack Gordy, I believe is his name, the car club founder. Of course, Frankenberry and Boba Fett have to be in there because it's Dirty Donnie. He loves those guys. And so this was the first thing. I start working on the glass. In the meantime, I sent the playfield off to Donnie, and he's just going to do whatever he does. I never see it until it shows up, and it's always a wonderful surprise. Here I am. This is probably about 6 or 7 colors into the printing. This particular glass took 18 colors, which is pretty unheard of. He was pretty apologetic. I didn't know I gave you that many colors. So these are special drying racks that I use in between color, and you put paper in between the layers to keep dust and stuff off while the ink is drying. Takes roughly 5 hours for a color to dry to the touch before you can print it again. These are enamel inks on glass. Right there, we've added a couple colors of brown. You see the sand color and the brown on the bongos. A couple of fluorescents are down. Frankenberry is a fluorescent pink, and there's a green guy in there. So there's probably a few of these in a row. Yeah, there we got the orange, and then I believe the next color, it's going to show the screen. So here's the special screen I use. These are metal frame screens. Silk screening often is associated with like these wooden frames, and a lot of people have seen these kits at the art supplies shop, and I highly recommend you don't buy one of those. If you want to try to do screen printing, go to a place that sells it for the t-shirt industry and buy aluminum frames. They cost like $10 more. They're stretched really good, and they don't bow. So you're looking at an aluminum frame, and this one's really trick because it's a frame within a frame. You can't really tell here in the photo. You got to look really close, but there are hex bolts going around this whole thing that allow you to actually tweak the registration while it's on the press. These are the screens for doing the right job. So use the little targets to line up your colors. And I've developed a method where the screen locks into place here, and then the table below it can shift around, kind of like an XY table. And so that you can kind of maneuver your glass and get your positioning just right. And when you do have that, I lock everything down with just big, giant C-clamps. I have them clamped all the way around the whole table, so there's no way this thing's going to budge. And then before you put the ink down on the glass, I always put test film down. I lay it right on the glass, tape it down so it's not going to move, print it, and then that's when I do the examination, make sure all the registration's right on. If it's a tad off, I can use those hex bolts and just tweak it a little bit and get it just dead on. So again, here I'm lining up to the key line. I don't line up to the glass that's already been printed. This is going to be a fluorescent yellow. Highlights on the girl is a reflection of the fire and up into the sky there. You can see there's a lot of overlap up in the flames, and that's because the gray, which is a dark, more opaque gray, is already printed. That allows, you have a little, the lighter your colors go, you can have a lot more slop, because they're not going to show up. They're being hidden by the darker colors. It just makes it a lot easier to register if you have a little more room. So check the entire area before I do a print. And there's the yellow down on that glass. We're getting close to the end of the glass. In fact, I think that's it. I think white is the last thing down. Yeah, and we're going to see white in a second. Okay, so I have the glass more or less out of the way, and now I started having to do little playfield things. These are drop targets, and if you've seen in Elvira, it has the coffins that flip over. So we just made coffins, and we put the beatnik's head in there. And actually did this process more than once because I didn't like that purple, so I redid the targets and made it a darker purple. I discovered this stuff when I did the Metallica game. The drop targets are printed on a plastic material that I don't even know what it is. It's some kind of like nylon stuff, and it's kind of gritty on one side. And if you... Is it Lexan? Okay, and it's frosted.
Yeah,
okay. I didn't know that, but my buddy had some. Okay, we'll get to that. I don't know much either, but so this is a Lexan. It's really thin, it's really flexible, and you print on it from the backside just as you would a back glass. And then when it dries, you put a double-sided adhesive on there, which is that brown paper-looking stuff, and voila, you got these little sticky things, and they're like indestructible. Pretty awesome. So I was glad that my buddy had this stuff. He is a commercial printer in downtown Fresno where I live. The first time I tried to use it, I tried to laser cut it, and the stuff ended up kind of burning, so it was kind of just used an X-Acto. Okay, so now we're on to plastics. This is pretty much the exact same process as doing glass, just a little bit smaller scale. And by the way, this game, with all the screens I did, the 18 for the glass, 5 for the cabinet, I lost count somewhere, the breakdown of the plastics. But between the plastics and the targets that you saw, I ended up making 51 screens for this game, which is quite a lot. So we got two colors down there. And this is one of two sheets of plastic. Again, we have kind of a key line for the black. And what I've done is this is just a white piece of plexiglass with the mask on there, and I cut it just enough to score it and peel off the stuff I didn't want, which gives you the nice white plastic. And the brown is the protective material, and I use that as a lineup guide for the key line. And I know that that is exactly where this thing is going to hit inside the laser cutter that I use. So I print to this. This is my template. That's the second sheet. You got to make extras because something always goes wrong in printing or cutting or what have you, and you want to make extras in case they ever break. It's a lot of work to do this just for one time. Okay, this is the way fluorescent inks come. You just can't buy these in the can. You got to buy these pigments. And I ended up using, I think, 8 different fluorescent colors on this game. It looks really cool under a black light. It's got just... You know, like looks like one of those psychedelic posters, kind of. Unfortunately, I don't have a photo of that. I wish I did. So you just get this powder and you mix it in a clear base with a thinner, and there's your fluorescent inks. There's right there is kind of a fluorescent aqua that I used. Again, this is the screen for that color I just mixed. Lining it up. It's the same way I did with glass. So tad off there, making my adjustments, double-checking everything. These are the slingshot plastics. And there it is with that color down. These are printed fairly thin. You can see right through them, and that's to allow them to illuminate. You mix them down maybe 3 parts clear to 1 part pigment. Okay, and then I'm moving on to the cabinet here. I'm sure a few of you have probably painted cabinets by now. This stuff is a bit tricky because there's so many lines in there that it actually required silk screening. You know, you can't just make a stencil like that. It just doesn't work. You can make the base color in a stencil, and that's what I'm doing here. That is a airbrush frisket material. You can buy that at an art store. My buddy has it on the roll. It's awesome. I get to get these big giant pieces. So that's the black line that's going to go on the cabinet. Those little small pistons you see, those were just too teeny, so I just ended up masking those off. I told Donnie this is just not going to fly. It's too tight for this type of printing. And he was fine with that. So these are hand cut with X-Acto knife. You peel it off. Peel off the stuff you don't want to mask. Again, you can see that's a pretty fine gap there. It's less than an eighth of an inch. You remove all the material, and you... Once you got all the material off, you cover the whole thing with a big wide piece of masking tape. There, I'm lifting the stuff off. There it is with the tape. And now the tape is what holds the stencil together. You peel it off the backing, apply the tape now to the cabinet. You make a few little marks where it's centered and everything, and then get on there nice and smooth. And the trick is to remove that tape without lifting the stencil, because they have about the same amount of tack to them or stickiness. So you got to kind of do it at a really sharp angle. Like so. I'm pulling it back almost straight back. So you got the whole cabinet masked with the stencil. I still haven't seen the play field. I'm already done with the back glass. Plastics are pretty much done. The targets, on and on. And getting the cabinet ready. There's the first base, first color. Just light coats. Don't want to lift the stencil up, so use really light pressure. This is this one was actually sprayed vertically like that, but I tend to like to paint cabinets on their side because of you can get up really high and just let it kind of fog down. Okay, now here's the dilemma. How in the world do you silk screen on a cabinet? You know, most people don't do stuff like this. I'm sure when they do this in production, there's all kinds of crazy jigs and things that they build to accommodate hundreds and thousands of cabinets at a time, but I just got kind of inventive here. I took some hinge clamps, which is what you see there. These are available at art stores, and I attached them to a 2x6, screwed that at the right height across my door frame to my office, put a big screen in there, used another cabinet, which is the same height, at the other end to lift the screen up off the Beatniks cabinet, which you see there. Put the cabinet on a blanket so I could slide it around underneath the screen to do the registration. So this is pretty, just makeshift, but it was real cheap. So I'm checking my registration, and I know I got one shot at this, so I don't want to screw it up. So the first thing you do is you put the ink in there, and then you lift the screen up just a little bit and drag it across the whole image. You're basically loading the screen with your ink. It's called a flood. You'll see that right here. And then you set the screen down, and it's about a half an inch off the surface of the, maybe a little more on this, because this screen is pretty flexy. It's a really big, oversized screen. The reason why you got one shot at this is because the screens do move when you pull the squeegee, and so if you do it more than once, it's probably not going to be the exact same image when you're doing it by hand, because your pressure is going to be different. So that's the real deal there. The other trick too is to not stop. Once you got the squeegee going, you just got to do it as smooth as you can without stopping. If you stop, it will tend to bleed out where you stopped, because the ink will pool up right there, and it's enough to ruin it. So that's the results. I had to do this off of a stepladder for the front, but it was the same technique. I raised the bar up on the door, registered it to the front of the cabinet. And the other bummer about this process was the cabinet was very wobbly at this point. So again, I knew I only had one shot at this. There's maybe that might be the darker purple. So we had this big box of Beatniks goodies. Beatniks is a car club, and these are those things that go over the license plate. You see a lot of custom cars that have their car name. And I go, man, that looks kind of like the Bally thing that they used on Elvira. That would look really good up in the speaker panel that sits above the glass. So that was the one we decided on. There was two of these to choose from, but this one had this cool arc to it and just looked a lot more organic than the other one, which was real kind of boxy. It looked more like a license plate. So that's my dad cutting that for me on his metal bandsaw. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they sent over a few different ones. No, I wish I did. My friend does that, though. Yeah, my friend Jack, he'll cast anything for you. So then there's the back panel where the ramps go through there and they come back, and that's the area that is normally light the deadheads, and we didn't know what to do. So we, you'll see later on, we had the tombstones to deal with that were normally targets, and we didn't want to do tombstones, even though that would be pretty Metallica with their last record has tombstone or coffins on it. But so Donnie loves eyeballs, and we used eyeball targets from Data East. So we said, okay, we're going to make eyeballs in the back. So that's where we're at so far. The metal piece up in the top, and got one of Greg Ong's cool light-up shooters in there. That he actually cast this. This was a skull I got in that batch of stuff, and I go, oh, this is about the perfect size for a shooter. So he recasted it with the LEDs in there. It's a purple, really cool purple color. So in order to light the glass properly, I've done this on every game I've ever made as a custom. I always make my own insert light panel. This one is actually made in three layers, and the reason why is because I wanted, originally in the back glass, I asked Donnie to consider using some kind of back glass animation feature. And unfortunately, he forgot about that when he was creating the black line. So I had made a pocket area, which you'll see, which is covered by that extra piece there. This was going to originally have a color wheel behind it to change the color of the fire in the bongo area. So I designed this color wheel, and I go, this is just going to be awesome. It's going to squeeze right in there, and the motor is going to be mounted from behind it with the wheel kind of offset to the left there. So it'd extend. Anyways, cast reds and oranges and sometimes nothing over the fire area and be reflected on the girl. But I only had a few different motors with a really, really slow RPM, and it turns out they were both too deep. They were going to hit the circuit board. So maybe one of these days I'll find the proper motor and be able to modify this thing down the road. There, you can see the cutout right there in the middle. Now, all the other little loops and circles you see, those are isolated for flasher bulbs. I love flasher bulbs, especially we have a lot of stars in this glass. Donnie left it up to me how to illuminate it, and I was like, let's make it a nighttime scene. So I kind of darkened his blue down a little bit to make the sky look more like a twilight setting. And with all these nice twinkles, twinkles in the smoke, twinkles in the fire, twinkle bulbs in the cigarette lighters. And that's the way it lights up. Of course, you're not seeing the twinkles, but you get the idea. So the playfield shows up, and that's what I got, and that's pretty awesome. This is hand-painted, yes. Starts off as a chrome flake, just silver, and then a candy violet goes on top of which is a very transparent purple. And then it gets several layers of clear. All the lenses are masked off. The clear levels everything out. Then that gets scuffed. At that point, it looks really foggy. And then Donnie paints on that. And that is a special paint made by House of Color, which is designed to work with the clear. It's pretty hard to use from what I understand. It's real thick and gloppy, and it's hard to get it to flow really smooth. I mean, you can thin it down, but then it loses its opacity and it just doesn't look as good. So it's kind of tricky to work with this stuff. So because of that, then you got to build up more and more layers of clear to make sure it's nice and smooth after you paint it. Squaresville. Donnie loves the nitro. I have a Nutty for Nitro t-shirt somewhere that he made. So here we are. We're putting this together. Again, Dan Kramer, who works out of my shop sometimes. This is what he's doing while I'm stressing out trying to get all this other stuff done at the same time. There's more plastics down. That's probably just about ready to go back in the game. Okay, this was an idea I had. Donnie asked me what, you know, I said, well, we have to call these ramps something, you know, like, how about, you know, we'll keep one as the monster ramp, and then we'll do like a drag strip, and then we could, you know, have peel out noises or shifting or something while you're going around. You have pretty good hang time when it, when you do a ramp and a loops for sound effects. And so I thought that'd be perfect for or something like that. And of course, this was Party Punch originally, if you know the game. And so I told him, let's make one of these drag tree things, and we'll go as far as actually putting LEDs in there. And I thought that was a pretty awesome effect for the game. So these are kind of in random order. I ran out of time to arrange these, and I'm probably going to be running out of time soon anyways. So I'm just going to start scrolling through some different close-ups of the game as it's assembled, and then we'll take some questions. Or feel free to ask as you're seeing stuff. There was an extreme deadline to get this thing done for a book, a photo shoot for a book. So I threw it together as best I could. It did not work at this point, but it did light up. And, it kind of worked, but it wasn't dialed in yet. And so I hauled it up here to San Francisco to, and then we had to carry this thing up a set of stairs that had a bend in it, and it was really heavy. And then the room that we wanted to put it in, we couldn't get it through the door, so we had to use this other guy's studio next door, and he was really cool. We all know him, and he's like, oh, sure. And so then this photographer came out and shot photos for Donnie's new book that's going to be coming out at the end of this month. You'll see some of those photos. And you see there's the helicopters sitting in this artist's studio as well as inspiration for him to do a game. Building up the drag strip. There it is. It's working. There's Dan, if you guys know Dan. He was walking around the show. So, and then after this point, we got the game working, and that's when I had to pass it over to Tanya and let Tanya do his magic. I did have a second copy of the game that Tanya was using to test and write code for and all the stuff he does. Put sound effects into it. The boogeymen. Replace those with some pistons that Greg Ong made. That's a great feature. The car revs up instead of let's boogie. It's boom, 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 and the pistons are chugging away. And the back side of the drag strip. There's the eyeball targets that we used. If you look closely where there was a skull cave, you see a 3D cave there. That was a stick shifter knob that came out of Hetfield's car. It was all worn out and damaged, and I repainted it. So that's kind of cool that that got to go inside the game. There's a cool apron that Donnie painted. Take notice of that. That's all, you know, they call the fish scale technique. It's just an airbrush technique with a pattern. You repeat it over and over again and offset it to give it that zigzag fish scale look. Cabinet got damaged in transit, so here we are with epoxy and doing a patch job. And there's the core of the team right there. Tanya and Donnie and then myself. I thought we deleted some of those. This was the shifter I originally wanted to use, but it just didn't fit. It was pretty awesome. I prototyped it out. Just sit on this little panel, and I made this. I took the eyeballs out of the original skull cave and moved them around to reflect red and blue. So yeah, unfortunately that one just, it was a little too big when there's a ramp that comes back around the side of the head and it just wasn't going to work. Yeah, so there's the photo shoot. Let me know if I'm going too fast or if you want me to back up or anything like that. I see cameras going. Yeah, so sound effects, we knew we wanted all this beatnik stuff in there, and Donnie did a lot of the voiceovers himself. He would just say, like he said, Innsville, Squaresville, and what's up, daddy-o, all that kind of stuff. And then he got a bunch of music cleared for the game. It's kind of like really amped up surf rock stuff. It's really high energy. It's a lot of fun. I think the Ghastly Ones, the Demonics, Knuckle Draggers, those are some of the bands that we used. I don't think this stuff wasn't working at during this photo shoot. Oh, sorry. See, there's no eyeball in the monster yet. And we put those translucent buttons for the flippers and put light bulbs behind them. It's kind of a neat touch. All right, that's that. Let's see if there's here's a quick overview. If you guys want to see, it's just a movie file. All right. So, any questions on that? Anybody have a desire to make a game? 10 minutes. I got 10 minutes for questions, and we can talk right over this if you like. This is on YouTube, so some of you may have seen it. Yeah. Kind of lost count. It was probably 6 months or so it's been on it. There were a lot of delays. Donnie getting his book thing kind of right in the middle of the project kind of held a lot of stuff. That is still the Elvira flashing as far as I can tell. No.
What's up there, Daddy-o?
One thing that's really cool is when you first start the game up, the sounds like this real beefy engine just kind of revving and idling, and it revs up as soon as you pull back on the plunger. And then that's when it just squeals once you let it go. And Tanya wrote some kind of code. I think it was 3 different sound effects to make that happen, or is it maybe more than that. But yeah, just a nice touch as cars go boom, 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 boom. And then it just tears off and the music starts rocking. It's fun.
Is that the same did you have to expand the matrices of Lamp's versus the solenoid? Do you have any of that, or did you stay within it? Where did the drive for the LEDs come from? I don't remember Elvira, but well, they were already available and all that?
All the lights and all the gameplay logic is all the original Williams code, and so it's the original Williams System 11 driver boards and lamp drivers and everything. The only changes I made were to the code were text, so that they say things like Coolsville and what's up, Daddy-o, and then all the sound is being driven by I have an interface board that connects to the System 11 that intercepts all the sound command signals, and then that's communicates to a Linux machine that is running all the sound.
Okay, I heard most of it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
So you guys did Metallica last year and have a copy before that. You probably, I think, you helped Mike a lot with the
Surf Channel.
It's been an iterative process for you, right? The more you time, is it getting much easier for you?
I can tackle it, and I know ways to go about it, but it seems like they're getting more and more complicated, actually. 51 screens versus, like, maybe 25 on helicopters, it's a big jump. And it's all the same thing. It's just more and more work, basically, and the projects drag out longer. So, yeah. Anybody else? Sure.
I think it's cool. It's Hetfield lives about 3/4 of a mile from here.
That's right. I took it to his house.
What I'm talking about is this in production, or is this a one of a
kind? No, this was commissioned by him.
You're not going to be able to play this?
No, not unless you're buddies with him and he invites you over.
Or if you go to the car show.
Yeah, there's a good chance it's going to end up at the Pasadena car show, which is the real... Well, he loaned the Metallica one last year. I don't know. Were you here? Yeah, the Metallica one was here last year, and it probably got played thousands and thousands of times. I'm not even exaggerating. It like needed new rubber at the end of the show. So, yes.
Did you say that I don't remember the name, but someone had to clear the music? You actually?
Yeah, all the yeah, we did that. Just well, actually, we mainly did it to give the bands credit on the scorecards, so he knows what he's listening to, and you know, gives everybody credit. So, anybody else? Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, I'm wondering, when you did it, did you do multiple editions of Back to Blast and Playfield and Blast?
Well, the Playfield is a one-off hand-painted Playfield. The plastics, yes, and the glass, yes. You saw multiple sets of plastics in the shots there, mainly because I don't ever want to have to make those again. Like if the game breaks plastic or something, I have them.
But part of the agreement with the commission to do this is that it's okay for you to have multiples.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, technically they're his. I'm not like giving these out or selling them or anything. The glass, on the other hand, anybody who worked on the project did get a glass. So he's fine with that, and everybody really appreciates it. It's cool looking when you have that up on the wall. Mine are still in the box, same with Tanyo's. Just hiding out. Yeah, Dave.
Where'd you get the idea to do custom pinball machines?
Ooh. Yeah, that's a good question. I've always wanted to do this. I told you I have background doing a lot of art for... I mean, I was originally in the clothing business, so I did design and stuff for different companies. Nothing cool like this, but when I was a kid, I was drawing tables on notebooks and stuff like this. Oh, man, it would be so cool to make a pinball that did this and this and this. And I would draw my own little doodles of what the glass could look like. And, many, 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 many years later, I hooked up with some talent that I thought could do a good job. And Donnie was the first guy. So, always wanted to do it, and finally did it. So, yes. The next game, probably going to be the one with Brian Holderman, and then Kozik. And I don't know what the theme. I know it's up to Dave to divulge the. Dave knows the theme of the Holderman game. If you want to shout it out, but. All right. Well, is it cool?
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So Brian Holderman is an artist from the East Coast, and he made a game a few years ago with Dave's help called Luther's Vendetta. And both Brian and another artist, Mike Budai, created these with Dave's help from Papa. And they got these games shown at the Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh. Is it Pittsburgh? Okay. So that's a real big thing. And then most of you know that I had a lot to do with the Wiley game that was also shown at the Smithsonian. And so Dave and I are trying to get a series of these artist games together. And we have enough of them as a group so we can do a collective show in many years from now, because they take a long time. But we're trying to get these all in line to take this on the road, maybe, and bring a lot of awareness to pinball through different artists' popularity, because there's a big crossover there. Some of these artists are, you know, they can do museum shows right now. Why not bring pinball into their little community and do a really cool group show? So that's the plan. So I'm going to keep making them. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.